Welcome to Rust Belt Running. I am Andrew Hettinger, and joining me shortly with a coaching tip is Adam Wheeler. I'm really excited. This week, we're going to be reviewing the California International Marathon with Chris Gutierrez. Chris took part in CIM back in December, and he was kind enough to come on and give us a review and a few tips for the race. I really enjoyed our conversation together, and Adam stopped by and joined us as well. So kind of fun to have the whole gang back together again. CIM is held in Sacramento, California. There's roughly 10,000 participants who take on the point-to-point course. Weather at CIM, usually pretty optimal, including this year where it was, well, last year, where it was 52 degrees at the start and there's a high of 64 for the day. Minimal wind, good humidity, perfect day. And that's what it is most years, with a start temp of 44 degrees and a high of 57. And again, calm wind and optimal humidity at 87%. So perfect weather race, point to point. Negative elevation gain. Yeah, this is a fast course, and Chris takes us through a lot of it. So before I throw it to Adam for a coaching tip, I do want to ask, is there a race you've run recently that you'd like us to review? Is there a race you're curious about, you maybe want some more information on? You can drop us a line. Our DMs are always open on Instagram. You can find us there at Rust Belt Running. You can also email us at rustbeltrunning@gmail.com, and our website is a great place to find us as well. There you can find out about our different offerings and run coaching and different ways to support the show, like buying merchandise. We strive to keep our podcast content free, without paywalls, without ads, and we need your support to do that. Your listens, shares, and reviews, they are part of that support, and we appreciate every way that you've supported us throughout the years. All right, enough of that. Let's get to the fun. But before that, here's a Rust Belt Running coaching tip for the week.
Here's a training tip from us here at Rust Belt Running. We're starting to wind down the month of January, and one of the things that we have been discussing throughout this month has been the idea of behavior change, incorporating new behaviors, new routines into your running that might power your running forward. And I've been using strength training as an example to carry us through this little series. And the last thing I want to talk about discussing behavior change and incorporating new behaviors, new habits, is the idea that you want to get very specific and write out specifically what it is you're going to be trying to do and what your friction points for incorporating that new behavior might be. And I think this is something that becomes important as you get towards maybe the end of the first month of incorporating a new behavior, because when you first do something, when you first decide to tackle a new habit, you might not know all the specifics that you really need to tackle. You know, maybe your goal is to strength train twice a week, but you're not really sure how long that's going to take. Is it going to take you 15 minutes? Is it going to take you in half an hour? How is that all going to play out? And you might have to go through a few weeks of doing that new behavior before you start to realize exactly how long it's going to take. And then the other thing you want to start looking at are, what are the friction points? What are the things that maybe keep you from being consistent with that habit? I'll use myself as an example here. I am really, really bad at staying focused during my strength training, especially when I try to incorporate it after a run. I get home from my run, I'm a little tired, and it'd be really nice just to sit down and kind of relax a little bit, maybe kind of waste some time on my phone. But then all of a sudden, half an hour has gone by and I haven't done the strength training that I wanted to do. And so one of the things that I discovered was that I needed to write out what my friction points were. Number one, I'm tired. So what could I do to make sure that I didn't allow myself to sit down? Well, the first thing I do is, when I get home, if I change out of my sweaty clothes, I set a timer for 20 minutes. And instantly, that's a trigger for me to get to work and start strength training. I also lock my phone. If I don't have the temptation of sitting down and just kind of endlessly scrolling through my phone, that I'm able to get myself more focused on my strength training. So I actually have a focusing app on my phone. I go into that, I set that for 20 minutes, and that way I can't get into my phone during that time that I'm strength training. And then I also have the specific exercises that I want to do written out. Those are exercises that I have figured out work best for me over a lot of different repeated attempts. And so I've got those written out. I know specifically what exercises I want to do, how many of them I want to do. And I rip through those, and I've discovered over years of troubleshooting that 20 to 25 minutes is the perfect time for me, and then I can get done. Now, there's different things that might trip you up. I know one of the things that has kind of tripped me up in the past, especially when I would go to the gym, is that there's a huge difference between the sort of recovery and time you need to do maybe like a full body weight circuit versus going to the gym and lifting heavier. The heavier you lift, the more rest you're going to require between sets, because it's just harder on your neuromusculature. And so part of what you need to do is not worry too much in the early going about planning and trying to have everything perfect, but really just going through the initial attempts at the routine and being really mindful about what's working and what might not be working. And then as you get better at kind of understanding what triggers you to maybe avoid the routine, or maybe you start to figure out, like, time-wise what works best for you, you can start to write out specifically how you want that perfect or better routine to look for you. And then you can get really specific with what that routine is going to look like. And you can be very specific about how you're going to handle those triggers, those things that might keep you from entering that routine or sticking with the routine. And really the idea is just that as you keep going, it's never about being perfect. It's about being persistent. And it's about this idea that we always want to be looking for different tweaks that'll keep us more focused and more apt to stick with this routine and behavior that we're trying to incorporate. I think it's really important to recognize that as time goes on, what that routine looks like might change. Maybe we want to lift a little bit less. Maybe we don't want to do it as much. Maybe we've decided that we're going to go from doing body weight circuits to going to the gym twice a week and lifting heavier. And whatever changes we're going to make, all that's fine. But we just have to understand that we're always going to be looking to understand that these habits, they're going to change over time. And as they change, we just need to be mindful about how we're going to plan that out and about how we're going to plan to make sure that we don't get kind of dragged off course. And as long as you're okay with that idea that it's not about being perfect, but it's about continually trying to refine these new behaviors and continue to incorporate them into a running routine, you're going to be more apt to stick with it, and you're going to be more apt to experience the benefits of incorporating those routines into your running.
Thank you so much for listening today. And before we get started, this is a reminder to like, subscribe, or view us on your favorite podcast platforms. This is one of the easiest ways to support the show and what we do. If you're looking for other ways to support us, head to rustbeltrunning.com. There you can learn about our different offerings in run coaching and shop for merchandise. Any way you choose to support us, we are most grateful. So now that that's out of the way, Chris, welcome back to Rust Belt Running. This is not your first time with us, but it is your first time with us in this new format. So we're going to be talking about the California International Marathon out in Sacramento, California. I wrote Sac Town because that makes me think about the fun days of the Sacramento Kings back in like the early 2000s.
Hey, they've been having a pretty good time in the last year or two. They're lighting the beam. Like, you can't be, if you're a Sacramento fan, you're not in a really bad place like you've been for the last 15 years.
But does it get better than those like late 90s, early 2000s Kings teams? Like, those were the most fun with freaking C-Web with white chocolate.
Well, I mean, you know you've made it when the league, and it's, and then putting my tinfoil hat here, when the league basically conspires to get you out of the championship.
Yeah, so those epic Lakers battles.
Yeah.
I love a good conspiracy theory, but we're gonna let's go back to running here. So there's about 10,000 participants for CIM. So let's go back to before the race. Why did you choose CIM as your race for 2023?
Yeah. So there is, at a certain level, I think there is there's only a couple races that you can do. So I think once you hit kind of the level on like sub 230 for men, and then on the women's side, you start getting closer to that sub 250 mark. Yeah, you can be in the fields with the rest of with like the general pack with the women's fields. But once you get to that level, there's only a certain amount of races that you can run. In the spring, you have people run Boston, but Boston's not necessarily a fast course. Grandma's is another course that everybody goes to. And then some people will do Indy, but it's not as deep. And then CIM is the other one. And then Houston's starting to become another one as well. But basically, they advertise themselves as the OTQ factory. I think you started seeing it before the 2020 trials. I wasn't too following the marathoning scene in 2016, but I remember before 2020, there's videos of about 100 people running under the 219 standard and all running in a pack. The race is made to run an OTQ. The race is one of the fastest courses in the country, and the race directors do a very, very good job of making sure that the athletes are very taken care of, and to be able to have an opportunity to run that fast with that many people have. And then if you run fast and if you have your own water stations, it's something that you don't really get at a major, whether it's Boston, Berlin. Yeah, Berlin's fast, Tokyo's fast. But, I mean, even if you're running under 220, unless you're in the professional field, you're not getting bottles. So that was the reason for it. I think 4 years ago, I had already kind of had the idea that the culmination of this part chapter of my marathoning life would end at CIM 2023. Anyone that has run it and been part of those packs or even run it for a PR, they will say the same thing. You never get a chance to run with so many people running that fast.
So let's talk travel and getting to the race, staying outside the race. You know, obviously you flew there out of Columbus. Being a race that's really designed for people to go after an OTQ, what's the situation like as far as staying there? Is it really tough to find hotels? A little bit easier? How does the race organize that for participants?
Yeah, so I'm not too keen on as far as anybody that qualifies as far as like the championship. I know with grandmas you have a whole different thing with that. For us in particular, we decided you have a 3-hour time difference if you're on the East Coast here. So to adjust to that and just not get any kind of jet lag, not even given a chance to do that, I flew out on Thursday. I believe it was Thursday or maybe Wednesday evening. Think about it, Wednesday evening, and made sure that I just had enough time to be able to have one day where I can just catch up on sleep, and then be able to just kind of not have to worry too much about getting everything all together. We stayed, I think it was Natamas was where we stayed. We got an Airbnb out there about 20 minutes outside of the city, just because the meetup point is in the middle of the convention center. And while it isn't as crazy as other places like Boston, where it's all crowded and congested, it's still like we just didn't want to give us a chance to do that. We wanted to be able to relax. And essentially, like, it's not going to have, we didn't really see too many like things going on like other big races do. So get a place outside, be able to relax, go into a town, get a rental car if you'd like. We did Ubers and we did split it with 4 people. So our group was myself and 3 other gentlemen with me. So we just Ubered and it wasn't too bad. I think we ended up not spending too much. It was like a $20 Uber, if that, to even get to the city, or $20 or $30, and that wasn't bad. I mean, number 4 people, it's cheap.
So many places to stay outside of a city like Sacramento, too.
Yeah.
And it's a huge place.
Yeah, and like a lot of these places, too, it's there's a lot of residential, too, and so like, it ended up being not that expensive either to stay out there, and especially because it is a point-to-point course, like, you do want to just make sure that, like seeing them Folsom, like, you have to get a bus ride back, but, like, we just figured let's stay kind of closer to the finish line, sort of closer to the finish line as opposed to Folsom, and just kind of do it that way, and not have to worry about just anything else. We just get a rental car that morning of, or we'll schedule an Uber.
So what was the expo experience like there? You walk in, is this like a big convention center with tons of vendors, or is this a more bare bones type of experience?
So going through the expo, it is a convention center, but it's kind of one general space of a convention center, not too big. ASICS had basically the whole, they're the main sponsor of it, so there was a lot of ASICS gear. A lot of stuff looked really good. Actually, a lot of pretty nice gear that ASICS come out there. I didn't go ahead and buy anything as far as what I wanted. I just figured I'd get some stuff at the end. Hats, sweaters, anything you want. I really liked the gear this year. They actually looked really nice. They had podcasts out, too. I forget which podcast it was. But I know Bromka came out. They had CJ Albertson, I believe, on there too. There was even a little section in the middle that allowed you to be able to watch the course. So it took you through the entirety of the course. On the website, it does have a whole thing that it goes step by step. I actually took that a lot before I made my race plan. But you were able to sit down like kind of like a bleacher seating and be able to like watch the course and everything like that. So that was really, really cool. A lot of really cool artwork too. Like, it was curated as far as like the history of CIM, a lot of vendors out there. I mean, your typical vendors, it's not anything different than like a Columbus or anything like that. I think a lot of these regional ones do have kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that it's actually might be a little bit better because it is like, I've been at Chicago, and I've been at Chicago and Boston, and they're a little bit overwhelming, and just a lot of things that are just like not related to running in general. So it's like these. I mean, I liked it. It was pretty quick in and out. How you went in and got your bib as well. My friends had no issue going in there. We went, I think, Friday is when we went in and get our bibs. We had a separate line for ourselves to be able to grab our stuff. We got a sweater, or we got a long sleeve. So this came in when we got into the... so we got this, ASICS long sleeve. So right
and
away
that's the
we
included,
got that.
That's the included swag. That's not like an additional... cost,
that's the included swag as soon as you get your bib. Yeah, that's and they have like a sticker on. Yeah, I really liked it. So I think overall I'm really wary about like race gear because a lot of it looks like shit, to be honest. But like this, I liked it. I would wear it around. But yeah, I think they did a really good job as far as like providing an experience for the enthusiastic runner. People that are listen to podcasts on this stuff, listen to like they had pros, they had different influencers that I've gotten a chance to know that influencers that I do like that I had that were out there. So it was really cool to see that and talk about their experiences as well in the course. And then they had multiple opportunities for like photo spots. We took one in front of a spot that nobody was really taking one. So it was like, you had like three or four different opportunities to take photo spots. There was a line at one of them, but the one that we found had no line. So it wasn't too bad. In and out, pretty much if you're just trying to get your stuff, you could probably be in and out there in like, honestly, 5 or 10 minutes.
Then let's skip ahead to race day. You wake up, it's race
pause
day.
Pause real quick.
Pause. Let's not go race day.
There's one thing that really stood out to me that I haven't seen at other races. You had some places that did have like goo available by the cartridges, but they actually were selling gloves for like $1.50. Okay. So throwaway gloves. And it had a ton of them. And for me, as somebody at 50 degrees, like his hands would freeze all the time. Like, that was really cool, and that was something that, like, as a race, I'm like, okay, you guys are actually thinking of people here. So they actually go ahead.
They'll have those at Columbus, and they're like branded like Columbus, like their throwaway ones. They'll have the Columbus Marathon logo on the back of them, and yeah, it's a brilliant idea.
Never seen that before.
Yeah,
and it's like $1.50. They were just like selling them here, mm-hmm. here. I'm like, what the heck? Yeah, so that was a call out. Sorry about the interruption, but that was one thing in all the marathons that I've run, I've never seen that.
That's such a good idea though, because the hour before a race is the worst, because you're standing around, you're not really doing anything. It's like, how heavy do I have to pack here? Do I need throwaway clothes? Do I need throwaway gloves? I love that, because it saves you the hassle of having to go around and deal with some of that stuff on your own. And it's like, I don't know if you're going to be able to find gloves at like a Red Cross or something like that in the middle of the year. I like that.
Yeah, before Chicago, I found myself trying to find any place to get throwaway clothes because I completely forgot.
Yeah.
I'm so bad with my hands that like that is not a... If I like travel for a race, I'm probably going to pack them even if it's like a spring or summer race that like the weather forecast is warm, because you just... I'm always going to be prepared with that or with hot hands. Probably both.
So let's skip ahead. It's race day now, and you said it's a point-to-point course. So what's your transportation situation like? Is this a bit of like Boston, where you're going to one rallying place and you're getting on a bus and they're taking you? Is it kind of up to you to figure out how you're going to get to the start line?
Yeah, so a couple things on that. They actually send out a email out to all the competitors or all the participants, and they say, which rally point are you going to be at? Are you planning to be at? There's like an A, B, and I believe a C.
Okay.
There is a rally point that happens at the convention center. There's one that's closer to Folsom, and I think there's one other one there. There's buses all the way to the start. And so about a month out or a couple weeks out, you had to like, they recommended that you send in your information so they have an idea of how many buses to get out there. My friends, we got an Airbnb, or not an Airbnb, we got a rental car the day before, and our plan was to park in Sacramento, and we we had to be at the, I believe we had to be at the buses by like probably five or so. It was really, really early. It was pretty extremely early. So one of our buddies said, hey, let's account 15 extra minutes and do screw around time. So we woke up at 3:45 to be able to get ready for this race, which not bad when you're in California, when like you're 3 hours back. It's 6:45. Yeah. So it's not too horrible. But I could only imagine for somebody on the West Coast. So 3:45.
I just drew a line from your adjusting to jet lag to that. I'm like, no, I'd want to keep that in there as best I could. I want those extra 3 hours.
So we woke up at 3:45. I'd make sure we had everything ready to go. We had already packed the night before, and we drove down. We gave the extra 15 minutes just in case we couldn't find any parking.
Yeah.
My experience at Chicago was I almost was a little bit late to my warm-up because I couldn't find parking because all the streets were shut down. And so I assumed that same case was going to be like that. Thankfully, no, like we had bought a pass for a parking structure that ended up being blocked out. But there was one by like this, there was an Avis, and it was a parking lot of an open parking lot for $20. And we stayed there and it was easy. Ended up walking up. We got on the bus. The buses were very, really well done. Everything about that morning was really well taken care of for us. You had a long line and you had buses basically lined up, take off, bus line up, take off, bus line up, take off. There wasn't really any delay. As soon as you got in, the buses got filled up, you got taken out to Folsom. So bus ride was pretty easy. Our bus almost got lost, but thankfully we had gone out pretty early. They took a wrong turn. They came back and caught it. So thankfully we were able to get back on time. We had gotten, from looking at my log from it, we ended up eating all remaining snacks that I needed, made sure that I cut off water supply like probably an hour or two before. But then we get there, and the really, really cool thing about CIM is, again, I think this is one race that if there's anything that I can say about it, is they really do look after the runner's experience. Because what do they do when you drop the buses off? They stay there. You can stay in the bus for as long as you want before the race. And if you are running CIM, and I assume they're going to continue to do this, where you can just hang out in the bus, there is, I think they were saying something about there's like a 9-to-1 porta potty to person ratio. They were bragging about that a lot. The unfortunate thing is that people were like, there's a long line to try to get 4 porta potties, so it ended up being a really long line across the board.
Mm-hmm.
But if you end up getting there before like 6 o'clock, it's empty and it's eerie and it's weird. But like, there's like, you can go and hit the porta potty and just not have to worry about an issue. And so that's what we did. We went and hit porta potty. As soon as you got off the bus, go hit the porta potty and then get back in the bus and don't get out of the bus until you need to. It's still, I mean, it's not cold in comparison to what we have here in Ohio. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like 30 or 20 in Ohio, and it was like probably 45, 50 in California. But like, don't need it. There's no reason to be out there. There's no reason to be standing outside. There's no reason to be like, there's no reason to be on your feet. You're going to be running 26.2 miles. Like, to be able to have that opportunity, because everybody left the bus and they kind of just, a lot of people didn't come back. So we just like stretched our legs and didn't do anything until we had to.
Mm-hmm.
And then an hour before we started our warm up.
That's interesting. That's definitely a race that like, yeah, it has it together for the performance athlete.
Yeah.
Like some of those things that you see, you know, elites getting at, you know, the more major races. I mean, you would all be elites at, you know, Columbus or, you know, Cleveland or any of these races around this area. All of you would be elites, and you're getting treated like it there.
Yeah, and mind you that I did not get into the championship field. I got into the seeded field. Yeah. So, like, seeded field was anything, I think, under 226. Might have been. The championship field was anybody under 220-30, so I didn't have the elite bottles, I didn't have anything like that, so kind of, I'm not a part of the general field, but I'm also not part of the championship field, so I didn't get that extra there,
right.
So we traveled like everybody else there. I will say there is warming up's a little weird. Personally, I'm not sure a lot of people do things differently, but me and my buddies and all the people that I run against, we do about 10 minutes or 15 minutes of slow jogging. Mm-hmm. And the hard thing is trying to, like, once, if you skip the porta potty area, it's when they say 9-to-1 ratio, it's the longest line of porta potties I've ever seen in my life. but it's also like two kind of a gradual uphill as well. It's up a gradual uphill. So like if you get around everybody else, there's like a little area where you can go run. I ran around a parking lot for a while and it was like a really tiny parking lot just cause I didn't want to run up and down the hills, for a warm up. It's a little bit of a tougher trying to get a warm up in, but like there is opportunity to go warm up. It's really dark still cause of time change and everything like that. But, yeah, I think overall you do have an opportunity to warm up in places. And I got to remember that, like, for the majority of people, they don't have an opportunity to warm up in places because, like, you just go into the corral or anything like that.
Yeah.
If you want to warm up, if you need a warm up before you go into the corral, you can have that opportunity to do that there. And then from there, for us, a little bit of this, I hope, doesn't happen again. One of the areas did not actually have enough buses. So they delayed the start by 10 minutes. My buddy, who's run 225 at Boston, was on one of those situations. He got in at 6:50, and he starts at 7 o'clock. So absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
My recommendation is if you have the chance, get the buses in the convention center and get there early. I mean, heck, if you're able to stay on the buses, it doesn't matter. Like, you can stay warm and you can be fine.
Yeah.
There's no reason to risk it, because if you need an extra ride, you can take a, I wouldn't take a nap, but I mean, you could just relax on the bus. Don't put yourself in a position where like you're in one of the B or C like bus channels where they're not going to be as many people coming through. Mm-hmm. Don't risk it at all. The corrals were a little bit interesting. So warm up already hits, we're about 15, 20 minutes out. The corrals were a little bit crazy. I remember them they did separate it by every 10-minute interval, so that was really cool. Now, I'm not really sure on my end if there is a sticker that says what corral you belong in or if you just walk into a corral. I don't really know that. I know our corral was separated seated and it was a championship one, but the corrals are a little bit confusing because some enter on the right and some enter on the left. So we walked all the way to the right and we couldn't get in and we were very confused. And so we had to come back and come around. But other than that, I mean, having the corrals with the timer up is saying what times people are trying to run. That's really cool. It's better done than a lot of races that I've seen just from like spectating like other races in Ohio and other places, like where you just have like somebody with a Rinky Dink sign that says like 3:40 or 3:30. Like there is a sign that says 3:40, 3:30, 3:20, and mm-hmm. it kind of goes down, and that's really cool to see. For us, to give a little bit of an insight of the elite experience here, we actually got a chance to be able to like do our plyometrics and do extra warm-ups past the start line. So there's the entirety of the sub-elite, and I think honestly, I'm not too sure, but if you were in some of those like other packs that weren't part of the sub-elite packs, I think you could have warmed up with us outside. Mm-hmm. Like you have the entirety of the start line and just like you could have just done plyos. Everybody's doing plyos. People are running onto the side of the courses and trying to pee. It was really, really, one really funny thing was there was like a, I think it might've been like a mechanic station kind of thing, but there was like that gate opened up and you can go through there. And the guys were going on one side on the left and the women were like telling each other, it's like, hey, we got your back. Go out there. That's your spot. The women's are going to go out there. It's like everybody really took care of their own, which is really cool and really, really, really respectful. I think overall, if you don't try to chance it and you do everything as it should be and you get the timing that they tell you to do, it's one of the best experiences that I've had as far as getting to the start as far as like the stress level, it's not as crazy. I was a really big fan of everything they did on the way there as far as an athlete's experience. I've run that. I've run Boston. I've run Chicago as far as the American Development Program for that. I still think American Development Program's pretty great. But as far as a point-to-point course, that CIM really impressed me. That was pretty awesome. The corrals were a little bit weird. So for us, we were separated between the championship and the seated between a rope. And I would say this is across the board for everybody here, is that you're going to have people trying to push their way to the front. Mm-hmm. And if like you're very confident in the time that you're trying to run and you're trying to hit that. So if you're a 3-hour marathoner, you're trying to hit 3 hours on a dot, like just be comfortable, be confident, and just like don't let the Yahoos, like if the Yahoos push you through or push their way through, like don't get too nervous about it. If you're somebody that is a 3-hour marathoner, but you know you're in 2:45 or 2:50 shape and you're in a corral that you're not wanting to be in, get yourself to the front. Mm-hmm. Don't mess around with that. Don't get, but that was one thing that was really, really surprising to me, is just how many people were antsy from the seated corral and trying to sneak into the championship section.
Yeah.
People were running under the going under the rope, and I was just like, buddy, we have 26.2 and they're like literally right. A couple feet ahead of us.
Yeah,
like, well, and you're talking about a pretty small group of people that is fast, that there's not going to be a lot of congestion at the start of that either.
Yeah,
so because that's you know, we're gonna move in race now, and that's generally the first question that I'd ask somebody is about the congestion. And I'm assuming, just quick yes or no, there's not a whole lot for you in that seated corral, right?
Yeah, it is. It's congested because okay. On our end. So like it is the one thing that was the most surprising thing for me as far as the beginning of this race is just how antsy people at this level are.
Mm-hmm.
So like I've run at the front of the field of the open field for Boston this past year. This is the most competitive, most talented group that I've run in. I mean, I went through 5K and I was ahead of OTQ pace and I was 144th. Hmm. Like, wow. And I was off the back of like, and there was still a lot of people around me. So mm-hmm. There was probably 175 people that were under OTQ pace at 5K. The whole thing is like people, like there's not too much of a separation. Like Chicago ADP has a massive separation between us and the rest of the open field. We do not have that. The seated field and the open field are connected, and so people are pushing their way through, and the seated field get really, really antsy and they try to move their way up the championship field. A guy that I sort of know got trampled at the start. On the left side, like he's a 218 guy, got trampled, ruined his race. Keep those shoulders up, and don't let people push you around. It can get real congested and people can go down pretty quickly. I would also say at the start, keep an eye on what the timer is at the start, because the timers that you're gonna see on the course are based on the first person that crosses the line, yeah. Not you. You would think after me running for 17 years, I'd remember that. I did not, because that's the last thing you're thinking about when you're chasing.
I still get tripped up by it sometimes. I'll be like, there's no way at 5K, I ran like a 26-minute 5K. But it's like, no, yeah, that's right. I was, you know, in the middle of Corral A. I wasn't up with everybody else.
Yeah, so go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask about water stops, but I'll let you, if you had one more thought there.
No, I'd say at this point, like, the race starts on a... I think it was like a pretty gradual downhill. But there's like, I think to a fault of how much CIM does promote it being an OTQ factory. And also just, I think over the, around the country, everyone from the OTQers to the BQers see this as a place is like, we're here in Sacramento to run the standard. whether it is OTQ or your BQ. And so I do think that that kind of label does lend itself to people getting really, really nervous, more so than any other race that I've been in. Chicago is pretty lax, but also we were pretty separated, and a lot of us were pretty seasoned runners. Boston gets a little crazy, but I've never seen anything. With CIM was the craziest, most antsy, most nervous wreck of people that I've seen in a race. And it might have just been because it was the last qualifier for to get the OTQ, right. But it was pretty antsy there. It's exciting, and it's an exciting race. Yes, we don't have fireworks like Columbus does, but like I think when you have the opportunity to be at the fastest course in the country, I do think it puts a lot of people on edge.
Did you, so with it being all these people, how many people got, like their own water, like elite water stops? Where did that start? Did that stop with the seated runners, or, did you have your own? Okay.
Only championship. So anybody that ran under 2020 or 2:20:30, and then on the women's side, they had their standard, I think a 2:42 something, got water. Got their own bottles, but also if you didn't make the cutoff before July, if you didn't enter in your time before July, you did not get bottles. So I knew a couple people that were under the standard of the seated section that did not get into the seated section because the fields were full. If you are, if you are a person that is looking to try to make that, has the standard for any of those sections, get it in early, because they will not let you in, even if you run. There's a guy that ran the guy who won Columbus this year, he tried to get into the seated section or the championship section. They did not let him in because he did not have, because they were already full.
Okay.
They are very strict on it. You got by July to be able to send it in. If you don't have it, you don't have it. So they're pretty, that's a pretty standard thing for a lot of places, but that they're pretty hard and fast on there. It doesn't matter how fast you run. I mean, you can run 2:18, oh, like that guy did and did not get into the field.
Did you, you use the water stops on the course? How many were they frequent, and did you think they were laid out well?
They were fairly frequent enough. If I remember correctly, I went through everything in my whole thing. Like, I think the first one was about 3 miles.
Okay.
But like, I think Erie has it every mile. You don't have that at CIM. I don't think it's even possible to do it on a point-to-point course like that. But then at every 3 miles, I personally, I had to. I mean, you don't have bottles. So this was the hardest time that I've ever had grabbing cups. They had very small, the small paper cups.
Yeah.
It was hard. I don't know if it was a combination of like the pace I was running, because I'm not used to running. I've never run that fast at that for that distance, or the volunteers being kind of afraid, because it was just splash zone. Like, it was just so many people like right next to each other. So like, the volunteers, it looked like they were very nervous to be able to, like, they were just holding, and then they would just like, by the time I grabbed one, it was half of it was full.
Yeah,
because it was just like, it splashed. Yeah, I think if you're on those edges of those standards, whether it's BQ or TQ here, and you have a big pack, is just kind of try to make yourself, especially in those early miles, you're going to have, this course does lend itself to people going out way too hard. So you're going to be with a lot of people, and it's going to be pretty tough to be able to get cups, not because of what CIM does, but just in general, it's going to be pretty congested around those first water cups. If you are I would personally say if you're in that 3:30 group and you have that, or you are a person that runs with a handheld, take the handheld for the first 10 miles and take care of that. Make sure you're taking care of yourself there, because it is pretty congested. That mile three is very congested, and it was pretty hard for me. This is the hardest I've ever had to be able to grab cups.
I can't imagine with the pace you're talking about running, that's essentially like if I were doing a track workout and trying to grab water.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to grab these little cups out of some old lady's hand while 50 other people running just as fast, shoulder to shoulder with me, are trying to do the exact same thing. Like, yeah, that would be a Yeah, that would give me really bad anxiety mid-race, yeah, for those sure.
Those guys in our pack that were just like, God, just let me get a cup. And I'm like, dude, I'm sorry. He's like, no, I'm not talking about you, man. I'm talking about everybody else. Like, they're just, people are just, it was hard. It was, I mean,
yeah.
I'm used to Boston. Boston, I've never gotten bottles. I probably never will. But, like, it's just really, it was hard. It was real hard to get cups. I had a massive issue. If it wasn't me choking on water, it was me not getting enough water in it.
Did they only have it on one side of the road? Because I know, like, Chicago, which I would assume Boston is similar, you know, you have freaking, and obviously you're getting way different support in Chicago than you're getting in Sacramento, but, like, you have water on both sides of you for a solid 200 yards. Like, is it just a limited space, too, that makes everybody converge on one another?
Yeah, I mean, it's on a two-lane highway for a lot of it, so it does make it pretty tough. In some cases, I think I remember correctly, there was only one side on it. So it is, in some cases, it really is tough. I would say if you are trying to run the best that you can at this course, the preview that they had, the video preview that they have, is pretty much on point as far as where the waters are at. I used it for my Reddit recap, and I was like, everything that they had in that video was basically the same poses that I ran in. But the water stops were pretty tough. They'll clear up as people get bit, but those first 3 miles will be pretty tough. And I think if you are somebody that is used to running in a handheld or has some comfort running in a handheld, I would say it's a pretty decent idea to do it. If you're, and then you just toss it if necessary. I had gloves on. I had some throwaway stuff. I mean, I'm not sure how much you guys talk about throwaway stuff too, but kind of going back to even this start here, if you have throwaway take throwaway clothes on you, you got a chance to be able to keep that on until basically the end. I kept the sweater on until the end and then threw it off about a minute before the race started. So if you are a marathoner, whether it is at Boston or Chicago or it's Columbus, Erie, any even small races, like, take throwaway clothes with you. Keep the pants on until you get into the corral, and then throw your, and have the sweater on as long as you can and throw it away when you need to. I kept gloves on until 4. The good thing I have another point why I ended up picking it is it's December in California. It's California, but it's also, like, typically it'll be about 40 or 50, so, like, it's a pretty good weather. It was, a lot of people complain about the humidity. Honestly, it's not humid. Like, it was, I guess, quote-unquote high humidity, but it's not humidity like we have on the East Coast or, like, in the Midwest or, like, in the South. Like, it was California humidity, and it didn't really feel that bad. Like, if you are a big sweater and you see the high humidity, just drink more, I would say, but it's not a case where, like, you really, really felt it that bad. But yeah, again, water stops, there are plenty. They're not as long as some of these other majors, but there's just be wary of those first couple ones. They're gonna be pretty congested, and fight for your water. it's really important in those early miles.
So one question I have about the course, the city. So this is a huge race for, you know, runners. You're talking about all the OTQs and BQs. Does the city get behind this race? Like, what's the crowd support like?
Yeah, I was really surprised. There was actually people all throughout the course. Now, it's not going to be giant packs of people like you have in some other places, but for how much it was, like, in places that were pretty, like, not say barren, but, like, a lot of places that were, like, more, like, scenic residential, like, to see people all throughout the course is pretty cool. People get really behind it. And, like, I think there was people pretty much all around. I got a chance to talk to Peter Bronca before I did my race, and he said there was one part of the course that does get a little bit quiet, and it is about, I think it's about either somewhere in between 6 and 12, which is a lot of miles, but, like, there's a strip mall section that gets a little bit barren there. And that's where it gets a little bit, like, quiet. And that's where he warned me about, like, hey, like, that'll be a little bit, like, you'll be a little bit to yourself. But I think overall, you did have a lot of people throughout. I think once you get to, I think 20 to 22 was my toughest time, because like I didn't, there wasn't too much, but it's not like completely empty in a lot of places. Like, I didn't think about it too much about like, oh, there's not a lot of people around, but like there was a decent amount throughout the course, and people cheering even at 7 a.m. in California.
Nice.
So let's go ahead now to the end. You're coming down the finishing chute, you get to the finish line. What's that end like, and then what's the finish line organization like?
So end is like, I'd say the last mile for that course is a lot longer than it feels like. you have a couple turns at the finish. The finish organization this year was a little bit of a crapshoot. I'm pretty sure that I finished at the wrong finish line. So championship finished on the left, and then I think everybody else finished on the right. But I think if you ran fast enough, you went on the left. So like, I went on the left, and the left was a lot longer than the right, because obviously if you're going a little bit longer. So that was really actually props on them to have the starting line staggered to make sure that you're running the distance there.
Yeah.
So you'll see two finish lines. The first entrance will be for, I think, anybody under 220, and on the women's side, the women's standard, 237 and probably 240 something. But then on the right side, you have the general field there. I had a really frustrating time personally at the finish line. I think a lot of people did this year, because the only way out was to go to the elite section, and I wasn't elite. And so I was like, I've never been this kind of guy that was like, I want my medal and mm-hmm. I want to get out of here. But I wanted my medal and I wanted to go relax. And I had to fight through like some security and be like, hey, I need, like, I'm not elite. I'm not going with them. Take me to the other place. This year they had it advertised as, I think it was the 40th anniversary. So I can't say that it's going to happen again, but this year they advertised a couple things. So they advertised a backpack.
Nice.
Yeah.
This is all available on our YouTube, by the way, which we're posting to, if you want to see what he's showing us and you're just hearing it.
A water bottle with a little bit of Noon in it.
Okay.
So Noon branded water bottle.
Yeah.
And then
for a Noon ambassador right
here. Yeah, as a Noon elite, it was kind of nice. and a medal. And as you can see, I can't find my medal. I don't have a medal. So there was a mix-up this year where they didn't have basically they were like, hey, pick one or the other. They want the medal or they want the backpack. And I was like, well, I don't really care about too much. At that moment, I was like, it's a backpack. I don't mind having another backpack. The only one I have is my Boston backpack. I'll take the backpack. But as the day went on, I was like, man, I should have gone with the medal.
Yeah.
A lot of people picked multiple. And then a little bit later in the day, we got an email, or it might have been the next day, an email saying that they messed up, that everybody should have gotten all three.
Okay.
So I'm getting my medal shipped sometime in January.
Okay.
So it was a screw up on their side. They owned up to it. A lot of people, and I feel really, really bad for some of the back of the packers here. They did not get medals, mm-hmm. and that sucks. That yeah. So they did own up to it, and they said, "Hey, we'll ship your medal." Now, is it gonna mean the same as getting your medal on race day? No, but the fact is, a day later, they did send out an email and say, "Hey, we screwed up. We're sorry, and we're going to send out your stuff."
Good on them for owning it. I mean, yeah. Mistakes happen. I mean, mm-hmm. we saw it happen at Columbus a couple years ago mm-hmm. where they had the issue with them, I think, in L.A. getting through customs. And some of the backup packers, again, weren't able to get it. And, yeah, that does suck because it's not the same. It's about getting it in your hands right mm-hmm. there in that moment. And when you don't get that, that mm-hmm. sucks. So
it was the toughest time I've ever had. It was like, usually like with a lot of these dinky 5Ks and 10Ks, like, they give you these, like, really... I'm probably a contrarian with this, but, like, I'm not a big fan of getting giant medals at 5Ks and 10Ks, like, around town. I'm like, I don't want that. Yeah. Like, all right, well, what's going to happen? It's going to be in my shelf. I have a bunch of shelves here, or, like, a bunch of, like, little cabinets that are full of medals that are just, like, way too big. And I'm like, what am I going to do with this? Like, I might make them in coasters, who knows, or I just don't really know. But this is the time where I was just like, no, like, this race meant a lot to me, and I would like to have a medal and be able to put that, like, on. I am thinking of doing, like, because doing my poster, like, because Tracksmith was there, and they did a poster for that, too, and, like,
yeah,
had my medal on it. But, like, yeah, so it was a little bit congested, a little bit crazy. I think for a lot of the elites, they had a little bit of a tougher time to be able to, like, go through things and be able to grab their stuff. I don't think a couple of them didn't get either the medal or the backpack, just because it was just kind of like, with how much stuff they gave, I think it went really tough for them.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they owned up to it, and that was really nice. Post race, getting your you did have an opportunity to check your bag both at the convention center and also on race morning. So sorry about, like, that's pretty delayed here. I would say you can check your bag race morning. So you'll see them, people saying, like, you can check your bag later. Do it race morning. I personally keep my phone in my check bag. I know a lot of people don't. But, like, if you have a zipper on, like, a bag, if you have a zipper on any of your, like, sweater, just put in a zipper and do that. So I did that race morning. Getting your stuff was pretty easy. Afterward, it was pretty much nothing to be able to grab my bag, and they had already had it ready. I haven't had too much of an issue with that bag check stuff, thankfully. Boston was a little bit crazy with some of the things that I had to share, but I think bag check wasn't too bad of an issue. There is getting afterwards, post race party. I really like Firestone Walker. It's a big brewery out of California. They had 805. They had a whole, like, post-race, like, thing where you can actually have beer and just have a good time. I'm not sure if you could have more than one beer. I drove.
It can be done.
So I drove. So, like, also I just finished, and I really wanted In-N-Out, and my mom was there, and my mom didn't have a, my mom didn't run the race, so as you showed your bib, you got into the post-race area, okay, and you can drink some beers, and you had a bell for people to be able to, like, for PRing. Like, I think overall afterwards was really cool. Like, it was a pretty big area by the Capitol, and you were able to just hang out there, have beer. You had to have beer within the fenced area, but, like, it was large enough where, like, you didn't really feel like you were all over each other.
I'm flabbergasted at you not having the answer to if you can have more than one beer. I mean, this is Beers and Miles we're talking to, and I'm going to start calling you Beer and Miles now.
I know, and I think when your mom drives from Southern California to Sacramento, and she's waiting outside, and she just woke up earlier to watch you run a marathon, I think that's what you call a... growing up, I think I've grown up as a person now, or, like, I don't see my mom too often, so I was like, you know, I'll grab one beer just because I should have a beer here. But yeah, I mean, it's Firestone Walker. Honestly, Firestone Walker is one of the best breweries in the country. They are they changed the game a lot, so having that at the finish is pretty great. Hey, I'm now also drinking a beer. I'm drinking basic coffee from Carton Brewing. So I'm having coffee, but it's alcoholic. So I'm
nobody still needs to know. Nobody needs to know what time it is that we're recording this.
Nope. It's drinking time is what it is.
It's drinking time. It's not noon here yet. But I would say, like, it was a pretty wide open space. You were pretty easy to get your stuff. And then pretty easy just to be able to see each other. It was a pretty congested. It was a pretty smaller area, so it was. I mean, it's 10,000 people and not 30,000, so it's a little bit easier to be able to see each other. They did a really, really cool thing that I think if I want to OTQ again, I think I like in 2-3 years when the window opens, I think I want to do it at CIM, because they did a thing where like they had these like banners that said OTQ. And like Olympic trials qualifier, and when you qualified, they gave it to you and you draped it over your shoulder. And so I think from an experience for anyone that is in that level that wants to try to OTQ, I think it's a really cool place to do it at. I think Columbus gives you an American flag, which is awesome. But like you have a whole banner that says OTQ on it. They take you up afterwards. They have a big stage for all the top 10, but then they also have one for all the OTQers together.
That's cool.
And I think to be able to like, in all reality, like the majority of people that are OTQ or are chasing OTQ aren't going to make the Olympic team, but this is our Boston qualifier.
Yeah.
Right.
This is going to be the, this is going to be the highlight of our running careers for a lot of us. And so to be able to have a place that does highlight that is really cool. And it keeps the dream alive for a lot of people, and it keeps the dream alive for a lot of people that are chasing faster times. And who knows, maybe somebody out of that group ends up being somebody that's a competitor in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
I think this country doesn't do a really good job as far as like fostering that. And so having a place that does that and says like, we want to give the sub-elite athletes an opportunity to be able to like, here, that's a moment. It's a moment for everybody, and that's really cool to see.
Well, I have loved listening to you talk about this race. I'm going to rewind back to 2022 Columbus Marathon for myself for a moment. I went there trying to run a 3:05. I wanted to qualify for Boston, and due to a crazy year, I was just short, and I ran a 3:06:35. I was still extremely excited about that. And as I walk through the corral crying numerous times, holding my medal, I walk out and the first person I see was Chris that met you in person for the first time. And he got a sloppy, sobby hug, for the first time we met in person. And, the first thing you asked me was like, are you cool? Like, are you good? Cause I was just short of that goal. And I mean, I was obviously very okay. But I kind of, you know, I want to transition just for a few minutes. The main reason we were here was to, you know, talk about the race itself, but I do want to talk about your performance. But you know, you went there with a goal to OTQ, and kind of in a similar fashion, you were right there until the very end. And I kind of felt the same way, even though I wasn't physically there. Like, I sent you a message about it. Like,
yeah, same.
I want to make sure you're cool. And I appreciate how you were to me when I just missed. And I wanted to be there in the same way as much as I could for you after your near miss. But you were much in the same boat I was. So I guess if you just want to like take a few minutes here, you know, like, how are you feeling after that performance that day?
I think I was pretty open over this past year. I really didn't say too much. I think people within my circle, and that I know decently well or have talked to pretty consistently, knew that this was essentially going to be the goal for the end of the year. But I think I hadn't really announced it until probably post Boston, that was my goal. But when I did say that, I also put it with the kind of asterisk of like, this is a crazy goal. And in all reality, more than likely I will fail at this goal because it's just so out there. I mean, to say it and just putting it blankly, like I ran 2:23 at Chicago and 2:23 at Boston. I'm trying to go run 2:17:59. Like, let's be realistic here. I've been running for 16 years. I know 16, 17 years at this point. I know long enough that, like, that is such a crazy, crazy goal. And if everything lands right, I still might not get it. But to be able to have that opportunity to take that shot is awesome. And yeah. I think overall, like, with how the block went, the block wasn't great. And I thankfully I was healthy on the day that I needed to be healthy. I had a glute issue even the day before. And the day of, it felt good. And I said, you know what, we're here and we have the opportunity to do so, so why not take it? And I got to 20, I think it was tough for a lot of the race. And I told myself, just get to 20, because 20, anybody can say they got to 16 miles at their goal pace and say they were there, and then I don't think they were there. The race didn't even start. So I said, just get to 20. And then at 20, it got pretty tough. And I struggled a bit and just tried to basically bring the car home was my idea there. Because as the one thing that that is very surreal to me is even the level of talent around me implode. There's a lot of guys in there that are a lot more talented than I was. There's a lot mm-hmm. of guys in there that have trained harder than I did, that are running 100 miles a week, that are fitter than I am. And the race will chew you up and spit you out when you're running those standards, whether it's BQ, whether it's OTQ. You figure that out, that if you're running on that line, and a lot of us are running on that line when we're chasing those standards, that it can chew you up if you're... It has to go perfect sometimes. And, like, it's not anything against you. It's not anything against the training that you did. And sometimes you just get lucky. Sometimes you just need a little bit of luck. And to see people blowing up like crazy, guys running like 5:05 pace or 5:10 pace, and they're now running 6-minute pace, 7-minute pace, 9-minute pace, 8, like 10-minute pace, like they will chew up even the fastest yeah. guys. And so a lot of it was just like, hey, this is tough. 5:15 is impossible right now. I don't know. I keep thinking to myself, I'm like, hey, like, if I would have looked at the timer and like, oh, I'm 6 seconds actually slower than the timer says, could I have chased after that 2:18:59? I think it might have been an opportunity. I ran 2:19:13. Might have been there, but also at the same time, would 5 seconds faster in that 20-second mile mean me running a 6:50 next mile? I've never been into the level where it was like, really, every mile is a risk. And I mean, I closed, I think, in like a 5:15. I think I closed right back on pace in the last mile. But even then, like, every mile was a risk after 20, because like I could try to muscle it, but muscling could mean in the next mile could be 7 minutes and everything's gone. Right. I thought breaking 2:20 was like, okay, this is like my A goal. And that's the importance of having A, B, and C goals. I said, I told myself A goal obviously is getting new OTQ, B goal is to get under 2:20. But then the other goal was to, like, making sure that if I was going to die, then I was going to die I was going to die least. Anybody around me, I was going to die least. And I think that's something that you can take away, whether you're running at this level or you're running you're racing your first marathon. If you're racing and you're racing for time, that even when things come off the rails in the last four or five, although you realize that a lot of people around you are also falling off the rails. So you can just, the one thing, last four, like 6 miles, I remember Bromka biked right by me, and he's just like, he saw me looking at my watch, and he's like, stop looking at your watch and start racing. And I got my legs back under me after I saw some guys coming back to me, and then I just started thinking about racing. Mm-hmm. And I just started going, and that's the thing. It's like, you can still race. A lot of everybody yeah. else around you is hurting. You can still race. You can still start picking people off one by one. I think, thankfully, I think I ran the course as far as I could have. I got the best piece of advice here, and it's, if you got through this far, you're going to have the little best piece of advice for CIM is don't hammer the downhills. Everybody's going to hammer the downhills. There's some aggressive downhills over that course, and the one thing that I got from an OTQer and Jason Sollier and from Peter Bromka was, that was the first thing they said, don't hammer those downhills. They'll yeah. bite you. They'll bite your hamstrings, they'll bite your thighs, and they'll come and grab you. I got bit at 22 when I came over the bridge at 22. They say it's a downhill. It is, I guess, a technically a gradual downhill for the last 6 miles. It is not an aggressive downhill like you're used to at the first 16. 8 miles, it gets the hardest long uphill. But it is a tricky course. You're going to see it as like it's a downhill course. It's not one of those dumb Ragnar races. This is a fair course. Mm-hmm. I think this is a very fair course. Because with the uphills, you have downhills. You have gradual uphills and you have aggressive downhills. And it's tricky. It's a really tricky course. And man, it was a blast. And I would say, like, my coach has told me after he qualified with a 2:16.01 in 2022, after having a tough time and missing. He ran 2:17, qualified in the 2020 trials, and he failed at it a couple times. I ran Chicago the hard year, and he had told me, he sent us a picture of him, and he's crying, and he's fist pumping. He's like, I firmly, this isn't like along the lines of like, I firmly believe that like showing your emotion is important in these races, whether it goes good or bad. We work so hard for this dumb sport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, not show emotion is not a waste of time to not show your emotion after doing all that. And 100%. I took that last turn, man. And it just tears in my eyes, and just, I got emotional. I've never been that emotional to finish. I was emotional when I broke 2:30 the first time at Boston. That was probably the most emotional I've ever been. This was even more than that. It was a culmination of just, I ran 4:52 and 10:26 in high school. And I just was fighting to try to get an Olympic trials qualifier around 2:19.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Like, it's surreal to me to be there. Seeing somebody that I knew, Noah Drotty, took us in and was like cheering us all in. And I walked and gave him a high five, and he pulled me back and gave me a hug. And I was like, I can't believe it. I ran 2:19. Like, yeah. It doesn't matter if I didn't break I didn't get the Olympic trials qualifier. Like, I ran 2:19 even after things fell apart. There's still meat on the bone, and that's really, really cool. I think overall there was a great experience. The camaraderie around each other too, was something that like is unlike anything I've ever seen. People were passing around their water bottles that they got. Like, the elites were like, hey, I got more, and anybody want more? And it's like, yeah, I'll take some. Like, and then as you go on with these races, if you do enough of these, especially as you come to those time barriers, whether it's BQ or OTQ, you start noticing that you see a lot of the same people. And there's friendships to be made from that. Whether you guys follow each other on Strava, you guys see each other on race day. It's like, it's really cool. You're in this sport long enough, you'll see some of the same people, and you see the same people succeed. I saw a friend of mine that I raced against in college, and I saw him at the finish line and got a picture together, and it was really, really cool.
You said one thing that I'm going to, like, one little quote from you that I think is real important to, you know, for people to hold with themselves, like, through training as they get ready to go to race, and then we're going to land this plane and bring it home. But, you know, you talked about, you know, you had kind of a rough, not rough, but you had kind of a weird year with running, and you battled injuries like your whole running career. But you said to be able to give yourself that shot is a gift. And I think sometimes that is so forgotten with all the work that we put in, hundreds or thousands of miles put in to go after one goal at one bite. You get one bite at the apple too, you know, like, just to be able to have that shot. And like, that's for myself and my fall, that was what it was. Like, I put myself in a position to be able to go after some big goals. I came up short the two times I tried, but I gave myself that shot. And, you know, to hear somebody who is, you know, on the cusp of an OTQ and, you know, a sub 220 guy now, congrats.
Yeah.
Like, to hear you say something so simply that can mean something to me, who's on the outside of a BQ, or to somebody who's listening, who's on the outside of a 4-hour marathon or a 5-hour marathon, you know, just to be able to give yourself that shot is a gift, whether that's you or me, Adam, or anybody else listening to this. If you give yourself that shot, that's a freaking gift.
I think a podcast is going to be released in the next week or so with a good friend of mine, Alex Burks. He ran 2:16:45 in 2020, during this one of McCurdy micro marathons. And then he, when the, I think it was 2021 and 2022, or no, 2021, right before, for CIM, they said the standard didn't open until the week after CIM. So he went after it and tried to run something crazy because the standard wouldn't have mattered. If he ran 2:17 or 2:16, it wouldn't have mattered. He spent the next 2 years failing at every marathon attempt he did to get the standard.
Yeah.
He would run 2:27 twice. He would run 2:23, I think, once, and in the 2:19. And to the point where he was very much, he was running amazing workouts for those first two, for those years. He was running high mileage, and this guy ran 2:16:40. And he was at the point pretty close to, like, if he didn't hit the standard again, like if he didn't hit it at the McCurdy Micromarathon in October, I think he was going to be done with marathoning. But he stayed in the game and he ran 2:17:10, brought the car home, got himself the OTQ, and you'll be obviously seeing him in February. Yeah. Took him 2 years.
Yeah.
Two years of he was in that fitness. He ran 2:16 before. We all knew he was in that fitness. Mm-hmm. Like it happens. There's so many variables that happen between step one and the step that happens at 26.2. Mm-hmm. There's so much that can happen, whether nutrition wise, weather wise, that you can't control. Bad steps. I had one of my athletes that was trying to get the OTQ on the women's side. She stepped on a screw and it got jammed in her shoe. I saw another guy, same thing happened at CIM. Had a screw jammed right into her Adidas Pro. And it, you never know what can happen.
Right.
You just never know. And
just, it can just not be your day. There doesn't have to be an explanation or an event or anything like that. It can just be the wrong day on the calendar for you.
But the one thing you can do is, and it's my biggest advice for a lot of people that I'm training and I think in general is to, when you're running a marathon, is don't tune it out. Be aware of your body. Be aware of how you're feeling, and don't try to tune out the race, because there's a lot of things that you can actually pick up in, I guess, a postscript and look at, all right, or how was I feeling here? What are some things that I could figure out? What are some things that I can improve on? Because there's always things to improve on at every level. There's always things that you can. I'm already looking at for next race, like as like nutrition wise, what I can do. Like, what are some things that I can do as far as like strength training? What were things like? Before I failed at Boston 2021 to break 2:30. I spent the entirety of that next block working on lateral movement, like lateral strength training, and lunge matrix strength training, because my glutes and my hamstrings and my thighs failed on me. Keep a very, very keen mind on yourself when you're running those marathons and see what you can improve on. And this distance is crazy. There's so much that can go wrong. You can muscle an 8K in the hot weather. You can muscle an 8K when you're not feeling well. Mm-hmm. You can muscle a 5K when you're not feeling well. You can't do that with the marathon. It's just too much that can happen.
Our good friend Roger Davis here from Cleveland once told me, and Adam, you can't lie in a marathon.
Nope.
and that there is no truer statement than that. I also can't lie. I need to wrap this up because I'm approaching my heart out. Dude, I really appreciate all that you brought to us today. Info from the California International Marathon, and I guess Boston's next for you, right?
Maybe. If I get moved up into the pro field, then I'm doing Boston. I'm on the wait list right now.
All right.
If not, I would do Mad City 50K and hopefully get a spot on the world team.
There we go. All right. Big plans coming out of Columbus for Chris Gutierrez. Dude, thanks so much for joining us today. You can find Chris on Instagram at Beers and Miles. He has his own podcast as well. That's really good. And he releases sporadically, but it's always good information that he's bringing to you. And he's always drinking beer along the way, too. no matter what time it is, he's going to be drinking beer. So, to everybody listening, thanks so much for joining us today. And just one more call to support us. Feel free to like, subscribe, review us on your favorite podcast platforms. Follow us on Instagram at Rust Belt Running. Visit our website, rustbeltrunning.com, to learn about other ways to support the show. If you're interested in talking about a race you've run recently, or there's a race you'd like to get a review on, reach out to us on Instagram or email us at rustbeltrunning@gmail.com. Any way we can help you decide on a race in the future, we'd love to help. So friends, we wish you the best in your running journeys, and thank you again for listening. Until next time, enjoy your miles, everybody.